are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Welcome to the Screamcast episode 116. I am Sean Drager, and back from Fantastic Fest and flu free is Brad Henderson.
Yeah, dude, I'm not sick.
Or last year it was Fantastic Fest or South
it's
by Southwest.
Every fucking year, man.
And usually like we're like set to record and then you send me a text. Like I read the text in your sick voice. Dude, I'm sick.
Yeah.
So congratulations on avoiding that the Austin plague.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to be talking mainly about Fantastic Fest today, giving you a rundown. You saw like how many films? Like 36?
32, I think.
It's a hell of a lot of movies to watch.
It is, and I did it.
Wow. Like Travis Stevens was even impressed. Like I saw that tweet at you saying like...
You're a machine.
Yeah.
And it's actually my lowest... from previous years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
But yeah, it's
right.
An endurance test.
I know, man. I don't know if I can do it. One of these years, I keep saying it, one of these years I will do it. My four-year-old is, and he's now four, so he's getting easier and easier. So it'll be easier for me to negotiate time away. So we'll see. But, you know, my wife works, so, you know, me being gone is always a big deal. So with three kids, but we'll work it out. There'll be some negotiations that will begin, for Fantastic Fest. So, all right. I'll take a sip of my, coffee shop of horse coffee.
Wow.
CoffeeShopOfHorrors.com. Use the code Screamcast and get 10% off. we'll never like get huge because I'm horrible at, plugging our sponsors.
Yeah.
But if you like coffee, grab their shit. It's good coffee. All right. Well, we'll get into Fantastic Fest in, just a little bit, but first let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
Now, since Brad's going to be taking up most of the episode with Fantastic Fest, I'm just going to run through a few things quick that I've been watching over the past couple weeks. There's been a lot more. I'm horrible, man. I was trying to keep up with Letterboxd and everything, and I'm just awful. I always fall off, and I'm always like trying to think, like, what the hell did I watch? And it's been a couple weeks, so bear with me here. But the first thing I wanted to talk about, I watched Dan O'Bannon's The Resurrected. From 1991, also known as Shatterbrain, apparently.
Yeah, what did you think?
I loved it, man. I got the German big box here, and it's, you know, I talked about it on my little YouTube bullshit, but I loved it, man. Like, you know, Dan O'Bannon, there's just something about him as a writer and a filmmaker, like, especially around this time period, I guess, but. It's early 90s, so I was glad to see that it was still all, like, practical effects. But, it's, you know, I guess it's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story, which is always good. But, I enjoyed it, man. I want to watch it again. But
what does that mean?
I wouldn't mind watching it again. Sometimes movies, you watch them, and they're kind of one and done. Like, this is something that, you know, I'd definitely revisit, you know, a couple more times. But Chris Sarandon's in it. And, but I think this is a movie that if you can track it down, like, if you're watching it fresh, you know, watch it and be surprised with it, have fun with it. Basically a guy, he plays like a private detective, and he gets hired to find out what this woman's husband's been up to in this, it was in like a shed in their yard, but then he moved away to doing experiments in like this cabin, and he gets hired to, or I'm not sure if there's actually money and exchanged, but, he does get, asked to look into this, as some like reports of like, there's reports of these crazy murders and everything, rise up. So, check it out. I liked it. Great, great effects. Gets bonkers towards the end. And, Chris Sarandon, as good as ever. So is this available like digitally at all anywhere? Or is this one of those movies that's just like,
no, I think it's just out of print. I don't know. I don't think it's anywhere.
Was it available? It wasn't available on Blu-ray before. Like, but this is like this Blu-ray stack, like Red Shirt Pictures actually does stuff for this. So they've done work for somebody somewhere. It's just like nobody's put it out in the States here.
No,
it's just this German release. But it's like, I was expecting it just kind of be just this, you know, just kind of a whatever release. But it's a really good release. Like this is something you would see like, you know, Arrow put out or Scream Factory or whatever.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know, man. Just rights issues, I guess.
Weird. It's got to be just waiting in the wings to be released by somebody.
Waiting in the wings. Waiting? Is there a song called Waiting in the Wings?
I don't know. We can make one up. Waiting in the wings.
Oh, man.
Serpentor.
I know you're going to ruin it with like some 80s shit. I'm trying to make some like 80s hair metal
stuff. All right. And then next up, have I talked about the, this isn't horror, but the Transformers, the movie Blu-ray?
I think so.
Have I talked about it? I don't think
you
I have.
You could talk about it again.
Shout Factory released they had a steel book and then a regular release, but the restoration on it is amazing. I had the Australian version, but this one blows that out of the water. Let's just say I had a boner watching a cartoon about robots.
Dude, that's some heavy shit.
It's really good. They did this really, really good work on it. And I'm really happy with it. Blasting along here. I finally watched for the first time ever Basket Case, the 1982 Frank Henenlotter film. Talk about bad shit. This movie is ridiculous. And a lot of you probably have seen this many times. I came into this like totally fresh. Like I had only seen like the monster and I see him on like, you know, t-shirt designs and all this kind of stuff. But I knew that I was going to be watching it. So ever since I found out about it, and it's been, gosh, when I first almost bought the DVD, it was probably like 8 years ago or something like that. So it's been on my mind trying to watch, but I just never got around to it. And amazing that I did not get spoiled in this film at all. And this guy, this movie was great. It's like had that gritty, gross New York feel that I love. These earlier movies, how they portray New York. And it's about this guy that has this like, creature in a basket, and he goes around and he's seeking revenge on certain people. And it's great. I don't know. There's stop motion in it, which is always like something that really makes me happy in these films. And it's okay. Stop motion too. It's not that bad. It's not awful. Like that one Code Red movie I watched. What was that movie? But it's good. I'm awful at it. It's early in the morning. I'm awful at talking about these movies. But I loved it. I love the low budget charm of it. You know.
Yeah.
It's not like insanely gory. There's like a lot of blood splatter, right? In the aftermath. Does that change with the sequels?
No, I mean they're all pretty much batshit crazy.
I don't know. The thing is, like, now that, because I've never seen all these, like, I don't know where they're going to go for the sequels and how this movie ends. So I'm, like, really excited to check them out. I watched the Second Sight. I have the trilogy in this Steelbook. And I believe all three releases are available on
they're available over here now.
And I think the Second Sight release is region free, I think.
Yeah, but that's long out of print, though.
Oh, is it? Lucky me.
Yeah.
But really fun film, man. Really, really fun. I love these, you know, these low budget flicks. First, I was shocked to see those in full frame. So I'm like frantically Googling to make sure that's the original aspect ratio, which I'm assuming Second Sight wouldn't fuck something like that up. But it was, of course, it's a full frame or not, you wouldn't say it's full frame because, this wasn't made for TV, but it just has that, you know, gross, gritty feel, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's not as, I guess the sequels aren't as gross, because I forget, it was like this sequel was made like 8 years later or some shit. But it's more of like a monster movie.
Okay.
So, because it has monsters. Got so it. Like, yeah, because like other family members show up of that like bloodline or something, I think.
Okay. I'm so weird. Like I'm like avoiding spoilers on the, like on this movie, like 20 plus year old movie, but gosh, 30 years now. Holy shit. Right?
Yeah. It's got some great monster effects.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, there's a one really creepy sequence in it when the woman's dreaming and you know, she basically wakes up or imagines that she's having sex with the monster.
It's hot.
God damn it. All right, next up, based on, you know, BJ was talking about 13 Ghosts, I busted out my double feature Blu-ray with 13 Ghosts and House of Wax on it. And popped in 13 Ghosts to give it a shot. It's been a while since I've seen it. And the movie as a whole, like, holds up. The characters are kind of 90s annoying. But some great use of effects, man. Practical effects in this one. I think this is mostly practical effects, right? I mean, they all look fantastic.
And, yeah, I think most of them are.
Yeah, and there's the scene where the dude gets, like, cut in half by glass. And, like, the front half of him slides down the glass. Like, I love that effect. Always makes me happy when that happens. Or like if people get like in Cube where the guy gets like sliced by all those cubed up by lasers and pieces of him start falling off. I love that type of effect. That happens a lot in flicks. That happens, I think, in Final Destination 2. That happens.
I think you just made like a Cube Resident Evil crossover.
Oh, it happens in Resident Evil 2. Oh yeah, well, no.
The lasers are in Resident Evil. I think in Cube, like there's
no. It's just thin
wire.
Yeah. Holy shit! Did I just do that? See, I need to drink some more of my Coffee Shop of Horse coffee so I can.
Oh my god,
that's hilarious, man! I can't believe I did that. You know, Cube when the lasers come down. Wait, that was Cube 2. Cube 2 is awful. Cube 3, however, is a prequel and actually pretty good. Moving along.
You made it sound great.
Moving along, I want to touch on these really quick. I did check out these two releases by Cult Epics. I know you still have to watch these, so I want to talk about these a little more with you when you watch them. But I watched Sin, which is an original film by Nico. And it's like a 30-minute film. Silent film shot like they would have in the 20s, and it is three separate stories focused on three different women, and there's a lot to do with like I don't know, like it's like I want to rewatch it. I need to rewatch this, and you and I needed to discuss this further. But I really dug it. It's only 30 minutes. It's very like you almost feel like you're like in some college art show, you know, watching some you know, little 30-minute art film. There's the second story is surprisingly explicit and involving nuns, and very interesting, very very cool. It's something I'm not sure how much he has these up for sale, but since it's only 30 minutes. There's only a few extra things. I guess some of his Super 8 short films are on here, which is great. And then there's like a booklet in here, like with the, storyboard drawings, which is awesome. I love looking at storyboard drawings. So I think you and I need to discuss this when you watch it, but I dug it for what it was, but I couldn't recommend someone paying like $30 for it, but it's definitely something if you're interested in like experimental or more artsy stuff, like worth checking out. And then the exotic dances of Betty Page are friggin', you know, restored film of Betty Page dancing. Which is great. I mean,
is this a review?
Yeah. it's not a movie. It's just her dancing. It's a black and white footage of Betty Page dancing. And it's like this is something I would like put on in like a college party. You know, like having a party and you have it up on the TV and have Betty Page dancing away. It's interesting. Like there's some interviews on here, you know, with one of her relatives, her nephew, which is interesting. And, so if you're a Betty Page fan, I mean, it's something that I would definitely grab, but it's not a movie. It's literally just Betty Page.
Yeah. Dancing. But it's the footage that, Nico like found and was able to like release.
Yeah.
And, like restore, because these things are not very, well known or talked about. Right.
Yeah. It's super cool. Like it's awesome. So, I'm glad that's out there. I mean, like I said, like this is something I would definitely at any of the rock and roll bars I would have been to or any parties I would have been to when I was in college, like this would have been playing at one of them at least. This would have something that would have been playing somewhere. So, and finally I watched Chopping Mall Blu-ray. It's awesome. It's beautiful. Chopping Mall has never looked better. The special features are fantastic, and all of you complaining about paying $26 to $30 for Chopping Mall on Blu-ray, fuck off, save your money, budget a little bit, and buy the goddamn thing. Jesus Christ. Hey, sick of hearing people complain about it. That's it. That's why what's on my doorstep.
Wow, man. You just like dropped some, I'm sick of people's shit.
Well, it's like, you know, there's people that just complain about stuff being expensive, and like $26, I got it for $26. That's not too bad. And like how stacked the disc is, it's like, it's
well, yeah.
It.
Well, here's so the like, thing. It's like, we're, I think, here.
Stop complaining.
Here. I think the issue is, though, is that for us and for a lot of our listeners and people that have region-free players and have buying special editions, we're used to this because we've been buying expensive Blu-rays. But here's the thing is that all the titles pretty much that we've been purchasing – and the movies that we've purchased aren't the most well-known titles out there.
Right.
People know they exist, but now we have one of the most – not one of the most popular, but we have an extremely popular horror film that's being resurrected by a company that no one thought, Vestron Collector Series. It has all this shit, so it's on everybody's radar.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, when they were first released, they were, what, $27.99?
Well, it was like $40 on Amazon pre-order.
Well, yeah, then it went to $27.99, then it went back to $40.
Oh, okay.
So I think that kind of threw people off. But yeah, I mean, $40.
That's what everyone's been seeing. Like, that price? Fuck that.
But, yeah, the $27.99, it's like, that's pretty normal. I don't see anything, you know.
I know that Grindhouse Video is carrying them now. For a while, Mike didn't think he was going to be able to get them because he couldn't get a good price point because Lionsgate was selling them at a crazy price point through the distributor. He switched distributors and got a better one and was able to carry them now. During that time, I'd bought it because he wasn't carrying them. I'd bought them through Diabolik DVD and they had them and they were shipping them. So there's... If you see a price, what I'm saying is like, if you see a price on Amazon that you're like, holy shit, that's crazy. Check out these other distributors like grindhousevideo.com, of course. But if he's not carrying them, check out Diabolik, DVD.com and places like that because they know the collector. Like they know, you know, who their customers are. And of course, none of us want to pay $40. So, where Amazon is always the easiest thing to go to and you always feel like you're going to find the best price there. I would say always be checking these other sites because for stuff like this, they're going to make sure that it's reasonable. And, they'll take a cut to make sure you can get this. Cause I guarantee you, Mike still didn't get a good margin on it, but he's smart enough to know that this is something you guys want. And he's smart enough to know, like, if he moves enough, like, that's ultimately good for him as a store. So always be thinking about that before you go online and start complaining about it, you know. That's all I'm saying. And then if $26 is still too expensive, don't feed your kids for like a week and you'll be fine.
Damn.
I'm kidding. Feed your children. I'm just saying there's always a way to buy something, buy what you want. It's called saving your money and budgeting, which I'm awful at, but I still somehow make it work.
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, when they were first announced, because everything, when they're first announced as pre-orders, they tend to be a little more expensive.
Yeah.
And then people wait for it to come down, and then it came down, and it was like $27.99. Oh, I'll wait. And then everybody waited, and it jacked up back to $40.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. I think these things will come below $27.99.
I think so.
Eventually.
I think so.
Because they're going to be sitting on it. Because here's the thing, is that it's sold, but it's sold to collectors.
Yeah.
And it hasn't went to your normal Joe Schmo that doesn't want to spend $27.99 on a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So I think here, probably around the end of the year, especially around Christmas, these mm-hmm. things will be priced at $19.99.
I guarantee you they're not going to sell Chud 2 at $26. I guarantee you that sucker is going to drop down.
Also, yeah, because they're going to be sitting on a lot.
No one's going to be snatching up Chud 2. I'm sorry.
You got to think. They're probably pressing maybe 3,000 of these.
Yeah.
So they're going to be sitting on a lot of inventory.
I think so. It's great that they're doing this, but I think some of these movies I'm like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Because I did not like Chud 2. Like, I will not be buying that.
But, you know, another thing is it was funny because I see people complaining and then other people are like, well, it's all over the place. People are buying it. Yeah, count them up. You probably have like 100. Like, that's not a lot.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're not.
Not everybody's buying this.
Yeah. I'm surprised they're not pushing them out into, well, there's not many freaking stores left, but Best Buy is getting awful. Anyway, one last thing. I'm going to run this real quick because I promised them I would do it, and I want to hear your thoughts on some of this. But I got the latest horror pack. So the Blu-ray. So I want to show you guys what – I think this was the September.
You probably already opened it, didn't you?
Well, I did because I didn't want to make a bunch of noise.
See, I knew you were going to look at it. See, I did it blindly. But you can't wait.
Well, I didn't know when we were going to be recording, so.
You're a little Blu-ray fiend.
I was going to do a YouTube thing, but I didn't. This one, four Blu-rays and Reanimator's in there. The image disc, which is a pretty good disc. So no, I've already bought, it's not?
No.
Okay, well. Whatever, but there's Reanimator on here, in here, which I've bought Reanimator so many times. And then there's Saw 5 Blu-ray.
Okay.
But then there's two that I haven't seen. This one looks like it could be awful, but it's called Scar 3D.
Yeah, it's not great.
I may watch this with some alcohol at some point.
At least they're cool. They're putting movies in there a lot of people haven't seen because I don't think that's really sought after that much.
The cover's pretty great, though. I guess. I wanted to check this out. The cover made me at least Google it when I first saw this. And then there's a Jeffrey Combs flick called Motivational Growth about a guy who...
That's not that bad.
...talks to a growth in his... bathroom.
Yeah, it's actually okay.
All right. Well, this one I'd heard about it and never had a chance to grab it, and so this being in there is pretty great. Again, like I've said with Horror Pack, like I already own way too goddamn many movies, so for me it's hard to kind of get into this because I'm almost like I need to stop buying movies rather than I need to get more movies. But if you're a if you're someone just jumping into collecting either horror movies on Blu-rays or just jumping into horror, like if you're like me, like I was, 15 years ago, just starting to buy up a bunch of as much horror as I can find. Like this will save you money and this will at least get you a jump start on your collection. So I haven't I like the idea, but I haven't been blown away yet, but I think it's more my problem because I own too many movies. So, what do you think? What do you think about these four movies? Like if you were a new collector or something, like would you?
I think it's a good place to start. I think if anybody's like a hardcore collector, it's probably not worth it.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. I don't consider myself a hardcore collector, even though we, you know, talk a lot on the show. I don't like, I just want the movies that I like. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are quantity over quality. So, you know, they're like, oh, I bought look what I got, for $3.99 at the, you know, bin at fucking Walmart. And it's like, wow, you got like 10 shitty movies. That's really great.
Look, I used to be like that. So I get it. I get when you're in the collecting bug, like you kind of are almost frothing at the mouth, just trying to find good deals and trying to build your collection.
So, I think this is okay for that. But I think it's a great service. I really do. Yeah. And plus the element of surprise is just that I think hardcore collectors will probably get, you know, a lot of dupes.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll keep on doing this. I'll keep, it's a great idea and it's a great service. If it's something that you want to try, I believe you can go through the link on our site and get a discount. Go to thescreamcast.com, click on sponsors and we'll have a link to them right there. So check them out. And, like I said, but if you're a hardcore collector, if you already have a bunch of movies, if you have a problem like I do, it may be a little lackluster. So just know that going in. But if it's something you want to try out, give it a shot. And it's definitely I feel like they're getting better with their selections. And, but I'm like you. I know what I want. I go out and buy it. I pre-order a bunch of shit throughout the year. I know what I'm getting. I'm selling stuff, buying stuff left and right. So trying to make it all work. And so having a surprise thing come in for me just doesn't work the way I buy movies right now. So, but I'm excited. I'm going to watch those two movies, Scar and Motivational Growth, and I'll report back.
I hope you report back.
I totally will. All right. That's it for me, man. We will get to Brad's Fantastic Fest roundup in just a few minutes. But first, Josh Obershaw joins us with the news. Josh, what's up, man?
How's it going, Sean?
Good, man.
It's been a while.
It's been way too long. I've missed your voice.
Well, hopefully other people out there miss my voice, too. And by the way, happy October, everyone. Yes. It's finally here. And, like you said, it's been a while, so there's a lot of ground to cover. So let's get to it. And I want to start with some movie news. And it looks like Saw Legacy is happening. It's been rumored for a long time. Lionsgate has been trying to get it off the ground. And it looks like it is going to be happening. According to Bloody Disgusting, it's in production. But we still don't know who's going to be in the cast. We do know who's going to be writing it. It's the guys behind Piranha 3D and Piranha 3DD and Sorority Row. The two brothers directing it, they're responsible for Undead. And it looks like there's already a tentative release date. IMDb has the release date for October 27th, 2017. It's not confirmed yet. And there's also supposedly some quote-unquote set photos floating around, but those haven't been confirmed either. But it looks like we're getting closer and closer to officially Saw Legacy being announced as coming soon. And some more movie news. You know that Suspiria remake that people have been trying to get off the ground since, what, 2007, 2008?
I was hoping they'd given up on it.
I was hoping on that, too, but it looks like it is going forward because they just added Chloe Grace Moretz to the cast. Now, she's obviously no stranger to remakes. She was in Let Me In and, of course, Carrie. And apparently, let's see, it's been in development. Producer Luca Guadagnino, who directed Swinton and Tilda Swinton and Dakota Johnson are apparently also in the cast too, which I knew nothing about, but they're going to be in it as well. And there's no release date or anything like that. David Kanjanich is penning the script. People are still trying to get Suspiria made. Now we're moving on to home video news. And we've got the extras for the upcoming Exorcist 3 Collector's Edition from Scream Factory. This is coming out later this month. And, of course, Disc 1 is going to be the theatrical cut. There's going to be a new 2K scan of the inner positive. And Disc 2 is going to be Legion, the original director's cut, which comes in at about 105 minutes. New bonus features include audio interview with writer-director William Peter Blatty, A Wonderful Time, interviews with producer Carter DeHaven, actors Clifford David and Tracy Thorne, and production assistant Karen Reddy. Signs of the Gemini, this is an interview with Brad Dourif. The Devil's in the Details, interview with production designer Leslie Dilley, assistant designer Darren Dockerman, and illustrator Simon Merton. Music for A Padded Cell, this is an interview with composer Divorson, sorry. And All New and All This Bleeding, which is a look at the reshoot and the makeup with production manager Ronald Colby, editor Todd Ramsey, effects artist William Forshee, Mike Smithson, Brian Wade, and actor and body double Charles Powell. So this is going to be a really packed two-disc collector's edition. I know a lot of people are been wanting to see this original vision Blatty had for this movie, because it is a really, really good movie. And also coming from Scream Factory is Don Coscarelli's Bubba Hotep, which is coming out November 8th. We have new bonus features to tell you about. We have an audio commentary with author Joe R. Lansdale. All Is Well, an interview with Coscarelli. The King Lives, an interview with star Bruce Campbell. Mummies and Makeup, an interview with special effects artist Robert Kurtzman. And a whole lot of the archival features that were featured on the DVD. So that's Bubba Hotep, and that's pretty much all the news from Shout Factory. And moving on to Vestron Video.
Oh, baby.
Shopping Mall and Blood Diner are out right now. I hope you guys are enjoying it, you lucky bastards. But there's more coming. So we got bonus features for the upcoming Return of the Living Dead 3. It's going to be the unrated version. Yes. What else? Restored or remastered, packed with special features, including an audio commentary with director Brian Usna, audio commentary with actress Melinda Clark, and special makeup effects artist Tom Renone, a conversation with director Brian Usna and screenwriter John Penny, interview with special effects artist Steve Johnson, interview with producer David Trippett, a still gallery, and theatrical trailers. And this one comes out on November 22nd.
This is the one I'm really excited for.
Oh, me too.
I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to the Waxwork movies, but not really excited about Chud 2. That's my personal take. But this one, man, so pumped. Brian Usna for life.
Agreed. I actually like Return of the Living Dead 3 more than I do Return of the Living Dead 2. I mean, nothing wrong with the Return of the Living Dead 2. I mean, it's good, but it's no Return of the Living Dead 3.
This one just has, like, so it's more of like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because, like, she's all of a sudden getting all pierced up and everything, but there's that little, like, it's like a punk rock zombie, you know what I mean? So I feel like it, I don't know, where she's, like, doing, like, body modification on herself. That's just so odd. I actually haven't seen the second one for some reason. I need to remedy that.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the punk rock aspect about number three, because that was a huge component of number one that was mysteriously missing in number two. So I kind of feel like three is kind of a return to form, but also just the crazy effects that they came up with for that one adds a little something to it.
Yeah.
But a story. Just in case. Oh, yeah, totally. It's another thing that elevates the movie. And okay, for those of you who are excited for Chud 2, Bud the Chud, that one is also coming out.
Sorry, did I ruin it? I apologize, everybody.
No.
Brad and I covered this a while back, so we've talked about the film and my feelings for it. So.
Right. But it's all good. But for those of you that, you know, are interested in getting this one, the completists, if you will, there's going to be an audio commentary with director David Irving, interview with actor Garrett Graham. That's cool. Interview with actress Tricia Lee Fisher, interview with special effects artist Alan Apone, still gallery, and video trailer. So that's Chud 2, Bud the Chud. Next up, from Grindhouse Releasing, they just announced the next deluxe Blu-ray they're putting out, and it is the 1971 Hippies with Rabies movie, I Drink Your Blood. It's going to be a deluxe two-disc Blu-ray set that is not only going to feature I Drink Your Blood, but also I Eat Your Skin, the 1964 movie that was double-featured with I Drink Your Blood in theaters at one point. And it's also going to include the director's long unseen X-rated psychedelic movie Blue Sextet.
Wow.
Excuse me, which he did in 1969. This deluxe set is limited to 3,000 copies, so if you wanted to get all of this stuff in one package, I suggest you pick this up, because first of all, I Drink Your Blood is freaking bonkers of a movie. And also, with those 3,000 copies, you get a I Drink Your Blood Horror Hypo, an actual syringe that fans can use to inject their friends with rabies. And if you want to pre-order your copy, it's going to be available exclusively through Diabolik DVD. So that's where you need to go to get your copy of I Drink Your Blood.
And I think that's one with all the extra stuff, because I know that grindhousevideo.com is going to be selling it. This has happened in the past with Diabolik DVD getting like an exclusive. It seems that they kind of have first dibs on these, and then the other companies can get those too. So they had kind of first dibs for pre-orders, because the last couple Grindhouse releasing, even with the extra stuff, Mike was able to get, you know, like for, he's able to get that puzzle, you know, for pieces.
Right.
So I think he may still be able to get those too. So, but if you want to lock in your pre-order right now, I think you do it through Diabolik DVD, but, he did confirm he's going to be getting some. So I'm not sure if he's getting the extra stuff, like that little syringe thing, but, you know, keep your eye on that if you want to keep supporting, grindhousevideo.com. But hey, Diabolik DVD is good too, so I do order from them from time to time.
Yeah, pick up your pre-orders, and the movie has a street date of November 8th.
Sweet.
Now we're moving right along to Severin. Severin has Burial Ground coming out. This is something we announced quite a while ago. But they're doing something a little special with Burial Ground. They are offering what they call the Knights of Terror bundle. So in addition to the movie, you're also getting a T-shirt, a shot glass. What else?
An enamel pin.
Yeah, there's a pin, and you also get a 12x18 poster of the new art that's going to be on the outer sleeve. I mean, the reversible on the case is there with two different versions of the poster art, but the outer arts, the cardboard sleeve, is going to have whole brand new art, and you get a 12x18 poster of that.
See, now that's cool. Like, if like Scream Factory did that, you know, because they give the extra slipcover along with the normal slipcover, and then they have the reversible.
Yeah.
If Scream Factory did that, like, then I'd probably jump in on those, because it's all there, you know. I like that I think I've talked about this, but I don't really dig slipcases all that much, unless it offers something totally different. And the fact that this exclusive art is on the slipcover, that's kind of cool. Not going to lie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the art's really good,
especially if you can get a poster of it, too. It is really good art. It really captures just how weird that movie is. I mean, it's subtle, but you can see it. I mean, if you guys have seen Burial Ground, you know what I'm talking about. I am so looking forward to this one.
I hear it looks really good, so I'm excited to see. Because I have the old Blu-ray that looks totally crappy. So,
yeah, this is a new 2K scan with a full shot-by-shot color correction.
Yeah.
And you've got English and Italian language audio tracks. The Legacy of Terror, which is a featurette on the house location. We also get Peter Still Lives. This is a festival Q&A with actor Peter Bark. Just for the Money interview with actor Simone Mattioli. The Smell of Death. Interviews with producer Gabriella Cristanti and actress Mariangela Giordano. Plus, you also get deleted, extended scenes and shots and a theatrical trailer. This is also limited to 3,000, by the way. Fans are kind of speculating that they may be also putting out Blood on Satan's Claw. Now, we know that this is available on Blu-ray overseas, but they posted a photo on their Facebook page of actress Linda Hayden from the set of the movie Blood on Satan's Claw, and everyone's going, are they putting the movie out? I mean, I was certainly one of those, but I'm just taking it with a grain of salt right now. Who knows? But just letting everybody know that. And what else is there? I guess that's all the news I have for this week.
Nice. A lot of good stuff, man.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do more of these throughout the month of October because it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, October, this is the time of year where, like, there's just too much coming out. I get a little overwhelmed with the releases and announcements. So, it's a fun time to be a horror fan for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, Josh, thank you very much, man. We will talk to you next week.
All right, we'll see you then.
Let's jump into some Fantastic Fest madness.
Okay. So what's up?
What's up, man? I don't know if we have time to run through all 32 films, but maybe give your best and best and worst of the fest. I know you don't like doing worst, but there's got to be some movies.
They don't do worst.
Sorry. You don't. Okay.
No.
All right.
Well, I'm going to break down Fantastic Fest, so you're going to have to hold your horses.
Break it down, man. Break it down.
All right. So Fantastic Fest, this is my 7th year going. I mean, if anybody's never been, I'm sure that it's on your radar if you're a genre fan. It's a must for sure. It gets crazier and crazier every single year. You know, from the first year that I went, which was Fantastic Fest's like 4th or 5th year, being around, I think it was maybe their 4th. It was fun. But it was mainly just watching movies and a couple things here or there. And then one year, you know, there was like, you skip by like 5 years and they were jumping off the roof on fire and blowing up cars in a parking lot.
Did they make you sign a waiver when you sign up?
So, like, no, that's not an exaggeration. They
were doing, like, I saw videos last year.
Yeah, stunt stuff like that. So this year they just had a lot more like parties and things going on. It was a lot of fun. This year, every year they kind of have a theme, you know, from a country. Like last year was Turkish, so they played a bunch of Turkish ripoff movies. You know, one year they did kind of like a House of Psychotic Women type thing. So they had a bunch of like the very popular like psychotic women films that play. You know, one year they had stuff from Norway. So they always do that. This year was an Indian theme, kind of a Bollywood, you know, theme going on. which I'm not the biggest Bollywood fan, just because I'm not a big singing and dancing person. So when the films have singing and dancing breakdowns, they kind of lose me. And plus, these movies are 3 to 4 hours long.
Holy shit.
So I'm not too keen on that. I can't sit in a fucking theater for 3 hours to begin with, not even for a good movie. You're not saying the Bollywood movies are bad, because they obviously went over really well. Josh Ricardo did the programming. And from what I can tell, he did a fabulous job from the responses that people, you know, just the, on Twitter, just the response that he received, which was, I think, overwhelming and very positive. I saw one Indian film, but it wasn't a Bollywood film, which I'll get to eventually. So they had an opening night party, which consisted of kind of the, you know, celebrate India in general, you know, having, they had dancers, you know, a few musicians, they had fire breathers, which was, pretty crazy. I attended a tiny bit of it because I'm there for the movies, man. So a lot of the events I usually go to for a little bit, and then I'm like, I'm here to watch movies. So, and that's what I do, because the party's always afterwards too. But you also need to prep yourself. So if you think you're going to go to Fantastic Fest for the first time and attend everything, you are going to fucking die after 48 hours. It's not possible. You have to, you really, really have to pace yourself. Even people that would probably be doing coke couldn't actually handle Fantastic Fest.
And Donald Trump wouldn't last?
No, he wouldn't last.
Hold on, let me turn down my microphone. I think it's faulty.
Ooh.
Political joke.
So, yeah, you just have to learn to pace yourself, because you don't want to get sick, because, you know, running on, you know, 3-4 hours of sleep every night, which that's usually how it is. You know, going to parties, being with people like side, you know, shoulder to shoulder half the time, germs and sickness can spread very quickly. So a lot of people end up sick after the fest, because your immune system, it's at a low, you know, your body isn't, you know, ready to fight off any viruses because you're so goddamn tired and your body wants to sleep. And so do you. So, you know, tips is to pace yourself. Don't overdo it. If you're going to overdo it the first night and the second night or the last night. You know, because those are kind of the two biggest parties. After movies, go home. Maybe even skip a midnighter. I know I don't want to skip movies, but hey, every once in a while, if you're like nodding off like around 10 o'clock and you'll move your fourth movie, by the fifth movie, go home. You know, and if you nod off in the theater, fucking get up and go. Because you already missed part of the movie, so there's no need to sit there. Get your sleep and drink a fuck ton of water. So you're able to actually enjoy yourself. Because I remember the very first year that I went to the full effect, when I went, because the first 2 years I didn't stay the entire time. I did like 3 or 4 days. But my third year I did a full day or a full week. Dude, I was falling asleep pretty much every midnight movie. I was fucking dead tired. I just didn't know how to pace myself. So even if you're like, oh, I watch movies until 3 a.m., I'm fine. So do I. It doesn't work the same. Sitting in a theater and, you know, waiting in the hot sun and waiting for movies to play and, you know, potentially maybe getting sick, it can really, really do a number on you. So anyways, that was the opening night party. They had other events. They had, you know, Doug Benson always shows up. He does a movie interruption. This year they did Monster Squad. Basically, the movie plays at a low volume in the dark theater. Doug Benson has a microphone, and he interrupts the movie. And just talks and tells jokes. I've actually never attended a Doug Benson thing. It's just not my thing. It's very popular. A cool thing about this one is that Andre Gower, he's a big Fantastic Fest guy. He comes all the time. He's the lead in Monster Squad. I think he lives in Austin, but he shows up every year to watch movies with everybody. And actually he was there. And word was, is that he was a lot funnier than Doug Benson.
Doug Benson to me is not funny, man.
Here's the thing. The Fantastic Fest plague of sleeping got a hold of Doug Benson, apparently, during the screening. And Doug Benson fell asleep for about an hour of the movie. Because everybody was like, man, why is Doug so quiet? So apparently he fell asleep, which I thought was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
Other events, every year they have the Fantastic Debates. This is something I have attended in the past. I didn't get around to attending this one because it was playing against a movie that I really wanted to see. I can't remember the title. Let me look real quick. I needed to really see, I think it was, a dark song I really wanted to see because my friend's short film was playing, before it. So I didn't get, to attend this. It's been everywhere between Keanu Reeves has been in the debates. This is a section, if you haven't been, is that two people, get in a boxing ring and they're at a podium and they have a topic and they debate it and then they fight. So in the past, I mean, Michelle Rodriguez has beat the shit out of Tim League, the owner of the Draft House. Keanu Reeves has been in the ring, Elijah Wood. A lot of people have been in the ring fighting. I think the best one was Tim League wanted to fight the BitTorrent guy. But yeah, sometimes it can get a little serious. Like one year, my favorite year was when Joe Swanberg was fighting Devin Faraci, and it became Mumblecore versus Grumblecore because, you know, Devin Faraci, I guess, was not a fan of Mumblecore movies. So Joe Swanberg wanted to fight him, which it was a more heated fight. Like some people take, you know, get really serious. And dude, he fucking leveled Devin Faraci. And you might think, oh, Joe Swanberg, a nice guy. Dude, Joe Swanberg is fucking huge. Like, he's not a small dude. Wow. Like when he took off his shirt and got his gloves on, I was like, why is Joe Swanberg so big? Like unless he was fucking pumping iron before the movie. Or before the fest. So this year was some fun topics. Josh Ethier, who played the alien in Almost Human and who is an editor in the film world, a very good editor, I might add, fought Jeremy Gardner, the actor that's and director of The Battery and Tex Montana. Basically, they fought over Tremors is the best movie since Tremors, or the best monster movie since Tremors. Sorry. And if anybody has seen Joss Ethier, he's not a dude to be fucked with.
Hell no, man. So,
and then next up was Josh Lobo and Jared Murray. It was Zack Snyder is the most wrongly maligned cinematic visionary of the 21st century. And then round three was the ladies that fought Bree Esrig and Whitney Moore. Superhero movies are destroying the film industry. And the final round, which was a very, 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 very fun fight I've heard, is that they had a special guest that was going to referee the fight. It was Greg McLennan and versus Michael Winchester. Greg McLennan's a programmer at the Draft House. He is responsible for pretty much all the action ones that go around. He is the main proponent of bringing Caged to life, where they do Nicolas Cage marathons. They're going to be doing Caged 4 soon.
Oh man.
Michael Winchester is basically the manager of the Draft House. He makes everything perfect. Really nice guy. Also, I believe he is a black belt, as in like Taekwondo or something. So their fight was Greg McLennan said Rocky IV is the single greatest boxing movie of all time. Well, Dolph Lundgren showed up to referee the fight, and that was history.
Wow.
Dolph Lundgren was already there for a premiere of his movie, Don't Kill It. So it was nice for him to show up and kind of referee the fight. So that was pretty much that section of the debates. They actually brought back for on Saturday, they had a band, Itch.io, that came back. Itch.io was there last year.
Yeah.
I think I misspoke last year when I said there's probably like 18 members of Itch.io. I was wrong, and I apologize. There's actually 32.
Holy God.
Because I said, I was talking to somebody, I was like, yeah, there's like 18 members. And they're like, no, man, there's 32 members. And I was like,
even more.
All right, cool. So I'm a liar. I apologize.
Well, at 32, man, I think it's
I don't know.
It's hard to, like, it's hard to freaking count them all.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to believe there's even 32, but that's what I was told. I tried counting and you lose count. So Itch.io is a very interactive drumline that portrays themselves as kind of being controlled by like a dark lord. They all wear masks, black, like what do you call it? Balaclavas things, like, you know.
Baklava. Wait, that's a treat.
That's a treat. I don't know how you say it. A ski mask. We'll just say ski mask.
Burkas.
No, not the same. Actually, the ladies, I think, wear burkas because there's girls in the band, too, that dance.
So just ski masks.
Yeah. And anyways,
their faces are covered. Let's just say that.
Yeah. I mean, they have a drummer. They have quite a few drummers. They have basically kind of the drum line set up with the drums in front of them, you know, where they, you know, put it over their shoulders, like in high school. And then they have big drummers on stage. They have guitarists, bass player. They have people that just walk around and dance. They have people that are in a dragon outfit. They have a bunch of ladies that are roaming around everywhere. They have a guy on a tricycle with speakers that's, you know, projecting the sound. They have people walking around with these huge amplifiers on their back that is projecting a sound that will dance with you and just stare at you and mess with you. At one point, one of the characters came up to me and he was dancing, and then he decided to crawl up my body and I was holding him in the air while he was dancing.
Wow.
But it is insane. Like, if you're probably on drugs, this is amplified tenfold by the experience because it feels like a crazy rave. It feels like that sequence in Matrix 2. When they're in Zion and they're partying, but like amplified by like 10. But a great, great experience. Itch.io is fantastic. I love the atmosphere that they do. I love just what they do in general. They have people like, they also have people with like strobe lights just walking around. They have people with, basically they had like this foam gun that would shoot like a mist of foam in the air. It's insane. But you can't have a drink next to them because they charge through the crowd and run, and this is like shoulder to shoulder too. Like it was more insane than last year because people missed out and they were like, oh shit, what's this all about? So pretty crazy. Next up, I didn't go to this. They had Moulton at the movies, so Leonard Moulton came by and. Wanted to talk to Tim Burton because Tim Burton had a premiere at Fantastic Fest, the Miss Peregrine and the House of Peculiar Children or something. Everybody's like, oh, Tim Burton. I'm like that too. I'm like, whatever. But Tim Burton is this alumni. He's been there. He was kind of near the start of Fantastic Fest. Even before I was there, Tim Burton was there. So he's got more cred than I do. He's actually premiered a few movies there. So props to Tim Burton for making that happen and being part of Fantastic Fest and not being super pretentious about it. I still not a fan of his movies. Then they had Puke and Explode, which was one that I was asked to do. But I, of course, got into wanting to see movies. And plus, I wasn't sure if I wanted to get sick or not. So they had a eating contest, not how much you could eat. They just had 8 servings of peculiar dishes. They weren't making you like eat glass or some crazy shit like that. But, you know, like they had donuts filled with like Miracle Whip and stuff like that. So you had to eat and not throw up.
Wow.
And if you didn't want to eat it, then you were disqualified. So that was fun. They had a karaoke party. Of course, they always have karaoke. They usually have like a karaoke apocalypse, which you could sign up for, and then you sing with a real band, which is headed by Allison Murphy, beautiful soul, who does a great job of doing that. Then they had Leonard Maltin went back with Bruce Campbell because Bruce Campbell was there to premiere the first two episodes of Ash vs. Evil Dead. Nerd rap, which is a very common thing where a bunch of people just get up there and rap that are nerds. The Fantastic Feud, which is a huge, huge thing. Basically, it is one of the highlights of Fantastic Fest. Scott Weinberg hosts the feud where usually they have like men versus women. They have U.S. versus, you know, U.K., Europe, stuff like that. And basically it's just a bunch of crazy fucking questions that Max puts together that only Max would think about. So thank you, Max, for always – he does a great job of doing questions like how many times do they say Carol Ann in all three Poltergeist films? The answer is like over 300. so he has people that help put that together. But definitely an experience to be seen. I've went to a few feuds. I actually didn't make it this year. But I did watch the live stream of it. And I think you can on the Fantastic Fest website or YouTube or something or Facebook. And then they had a Star Wars drinking competition, which I didn't go to, but I heard was really, really, really fun. Everything is Terrible showed up. They did kind of a screening. If anybody is unsure of what Everything is Terrible, it is – I forget the guy that does it. Is his name Anton something? Well, anyways, he puts together basically of the weirdest clips from VHS instructional videos to movies to Everything is Terrible and just kind of does that. They did 100 Best Kills, which is traditional thing that they do at midnight. They show they have kind of a theme that goes with it, like, you know, head exploding or something like this. This one was worst births and deaths, I think. But anyway, Zach Garlson and Laird put it together. They just have literally 100 clips of the best kills. And they talk in between them, but they usually find the weirdest, craziest shit out there. And then closing night party, which was a little of a bummer this year. Last year they had it at a ghost town. They tried to theme it with the film that is the closing night film. Like last year they did Ghost Town because Bone Tomahawk was the closing, so it was kind of a Western town that they rented out. It was kind of – it's a movie set. They film movies out there. It was very Western-y looking. One year they did kind of a prison theme because Red Dawn, the remake, closed the film or festival. Not a very good movie, but a fun party. And this year was Colossal, Nacho Vigalondo's new film, so they wanted to have something major. Well, I don't know, man. It took place at a entertainment center, which was a kind of had a skating rink, a movie theater, an arcade. They had a tattoo parlor. They had a big floor for dancing. They had a bowling alley. It sounds huge, but it made me feel like I was in eighth grade because it was like in a really, really rundown complex. Half the arcade systems didn't work. Just transfer yourself back to like 1995. Or maybe if you're older, transfer yourself back to 1987, and that's where we were, in some kind of weird. My friend Brian, he said, kind of a weird Dave Lynchian film. So, anyways, not the best thing. But anyways, that was kind of the big parties and events that took place. Dark Corner actually showed up. Dark Corner VR. They had Catatonic Mule and Burlap, three VRs that you could do. Catatonic, you were in, they strapped you in a wheelchair mule. They put you in a coffin and burlap. Well, they actually didn't do anything in burlap. He just sat there, but of course it has to deal with the burlap sack. I didn't do any of the VR stuff just because movies, which was, I heard they were okay. I had a lot of friends do them. I just have no interest in sitting there watching something. I want to play something, you know? So when VR is playable, and you get to shoot shit, let me know. They had another event that was very upsetting, but it was canceled. Was RZA was going to come by and do a live performance during the 36 Chambers.
Whoa.
And, he was going to play during the screening of a film. That unfortunately did not happen, and people were very pissed off. However, it was kind of shady because he had two events in Austin, pretty much back-to-back. They canceled the free one, and they kept the other one that cost $36 to get into. So it was kind of shiesty. It sounded a little fucked up. I was not happy about it because I was planning on it. And the other one, I couldn't go to this either, mainly because it was sold out. But Fabio Frizzi, the composer of Beyond, was there. It was off-site. He did a performance of a live – the director or the artist or the composer's cut of the Beyond at a church.
Wow.
I actually didn't know a lot of people that went, but apparently it was sold out. Couldn't get tickets. I missed out. I probably would have went to that. So anyways, those are the kind of the bigger events that happened. And now I am going to go through, some of the 32 movies that I've seen, the festival. So if you do the festival right, you can hit about 5 movies a day. If you're press, if you do it right, you can do 6 because you can see one at 8 o'clock in the morning. But you have to think that if you watch a midnight movie and don't get home till about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then you fall asleep finally, probably around 3:30, and then you get up at 7:30 to make it to the draft house by 8, that doesn't give you a lot of time to sleep. So I don't really push the press screenings unless it's something I really, really want to see or won't get to see. This year I was able to fit in everything but one film. What is happening?
Hmm.
Whoa. I was
adjusting my seat.
Wow.
Why, did it make a crazy noise?
Yeah, you're like, ow, dude, you're hurting my ears by talking. Like, it's like you're talking into a megaphone.
Oh, is that better?
Say something again.
Hello, hello.
Oh, man, it's so loud.
Really?
Yeah. It's like you're literally, it sounds like a megaphone.
Should we try to reconnect?
What is it? Just can you listen to yourself? Like stop it and then hit record again and just like listen to see what you sound like?
The recording sounds fine.
Okay. Maybe I'll just turn down my stuff.
Test 1, 2. Hello, hello.
I'll just turn down mine.
Did I just got loud on you for some reason?
Yeah, it like got really, really loud. It was crazy. All right.
I apologize.
So no, it's fine. So we will do the films now. So, all right. So let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
So if you do Fantastic Fest right, you can hit about 5 movies a day, usually 4 movies on opening day, 4 movies in closing night. If you are press, you can hit about 6 movies a day, but that's pushing it because that limits you to about 4 hours of sleep. Because press screenings start around 8 o'clock. So I usually don't do that unless it's something I really, really want to see. But this year I was able to hit everything that I wanted to, aside from one film, which I wasn't that upset about because that will obviously be released wide. There you go. So first up, I had Arrival, which was the new Denis Villeneuve film. Is it Villeneuve? I can never say his last name.
You're asking me Villeneuve? Yeah.
He's the director of Enemy, Prisoners, Sicario.
He's a good director.
This is a fabulous director. This is his new film about aliens that land on Earth. So I was going in thinking, it's opening night film, no big deal. And walked out crying. So that was fun. Everybody, pretty much, there was not a dry eye in that fucking theater.
It's weird hearing people say that about this film, because, you know, they're going to market it as some weird sci-fi, but apparently there's a big emotional core to the film.
Jesus Christ.
Fantastic.
Probably going to be up there with my number one or two of the year. I mean, this film blew me away. I knew people that wanted to go see it again just so they could weep. You're crying in the first 5 minutes.
Oh,
you're
man.
Crying throughout the film. The last 20 minutes for me were absolutely fucking devastating. I would cry, and then I would stop, and then I would be like, oh, Jesus Christ, and cry some more. But everybody was like that pretty much. Jesus Christ, dude. It's a beautiful film. It's haunting. It's scary. It's heartbreaking. It has everything.
Wow.
It has everything. The premise of the film is alien ships center themselves over certain parts of the world, very much like Independence Day. Amy Adams is needed because she is a language expert, so they need someone to try to communicate with aliens. They're able to go inside of the craft that's hovering. And there they discover aliens, and they try to speak with them and finding out what they want, why they're there, and all that stuff. But they have to have building blocks because obviously the aliens don't speak English. So they have to figure out kind of the language barrier and how to communicate with them. So anyways, before I start getting a little teary-eyed, I will move on.
Okay. I am intrigued.
Yeah, dude, it's unbelievable.
Okay.
Next up was The Handmaiden, which was very much a film that people were very excited to see, and one of those films that I think was most anticipated. It's directed by Chan Wook Park, who directed Old Boy, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Lady Vengeance, all that stuff. Good, Bad, and the Weird, which is one of the best Westerns ever made. So it's set in the 30s, I think, and it is about a maid who is very good at stealing, who is hired to take on a wealthy family to be the handmaiden, and is kind of a setup for her to kind of be using her skills. And it gets a little sexy. Very sexy movie. Very sexy movie. First time I ever got to see some hardcore scissoring. Huh. a very, very sexy movie. Extremely well done. Chan Wook Park actually got to be there. Had a Q&A. Apparently he doesn't speak English. if he does, it's not very great. He had a translator, it worked so smoothly during his Q&A. I was really impressed with the translator. It was fantastic. He was able to deliver the lines as like Chan Wook Park would say them, he would say really funny things, and you know, having somebody translate that, mm-hmm. you know, wouldn't be the same, but he was able to emphasize, you know, and put emphasis on certain words and make pauses and breaks and stuff, and was fantastic. So whoever that was, props to you, even though you're cool. not listening to the show.
Because he's done an English film, Stoker, right?
Yeah, he did Stoker. Yeah.
That's only English language film, I believe.
Right, right. But yeah, really, really bizarre that, he does, but I guess it's extremely broken, you know?
Yeah, he probably has his translator on set with him.
So, did a fabulous Q&A. He's actually inspired by Miss 45 was the film that he was inspired by, which is odd because I guess he didn't know Tim and the Draft House Films was distributing that. So he was able to find it on Blu-ray. I guess when they announced that at the Q&A, he was like, I'm the U.S. distributor of it. And, you know, Park was like, oh, cool. he was also inspired by a movie called The Housemaid, which was made, I think, in the 60s and then was remade a couple years ago. Another great, even the remake is fantastic, so is the old film. So definitely a highlight of a lot of people's festival. I didn't hear one bad thing of that movie at all. Next up was The Crew, which was a very tight and realistic film of a group of guys that are very good at doing heists, are have a little bit of a fuck up, and they're caught in between of like, hey, either we tell on you or you do this job for us. And of course, you know, you wouldn't have the movie if they don't do it. But very tight, not action packed, but the action is very realistic. Great performances, all around a decent movie.
That's
all.
Foreign film? French?
Yeah, it's a French film. It's called like Vanquers, mm-hmm. I think is the French title.
It's a tight 80 minutes, man.
Yeah, it's very short. It gets to the point. There's no fucking bullshit in between. Very, very cool. Next up, I didn't really want to talk about this movie all that much because...
Oh, he's hit it really quick. Hit and quit it.
Well, it was my most anticipated film. The Astron 6 guys got together and wanted to do a movie called The Void. They did a Kickstarter for it, or Indiegogo, whatever it was, to raise money for creature effects for the film. This is directed by Jeremy Gillespie and Steve Kanansky, who are two members of the basically five members of Astron 6, doing kind of an 80s throwback of a monster movie where a cop is in a hospital and the hospital is being sieged by these this cult and monsters are in the building. Sounds fantastic. However, this movie was extremely hollow. Monster effects, wonderful. Special effects, amazing. Blood, gore, bloody fucking movie. However, there's just nothing to grasp onto for this film as far as characters go. And I think all around people were kind of let down. I've even heard rumors the filmmakers actually weren't that happy with their final product.
Hmm.
So a little disappointing. Still, those guys are great filmmakers in that way. But it for right now, Astron 6 is stronger together rather than separating them. Next up was Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl, which is kind of a throwback Polanski-esque film about a lady that is hired. She is the niece of a woman that is – what do you call it when you can't go outside? Like are – what is the – like agoraphobia is it called? The fear of going outside?
I don't know.
Anyways, she has that.
Let me Google it.
That's what I'm going to say. Agoraphobia, or is it agoraphobia? Is it agoraphobia? I can't remember. So anyways, she
agoraphobia. Agoraphobia. Good job, man.
All right. Thank you. So anyways, whew, sweating that one. I was like, wait a second. What is this shit called? Agoraphobia is when you just get really the fear of being scared.
You have too much creatine, bro. Got agoraphobia on your ass, bro.
When aggro, I get. Anyways, Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl, directed by A.D. Calvo, who did a film last year, Fantastica Fest, called Missing Girl, which was great. In a movie, kind of a low-budget horror film called The Midnight Game that I really liked. So I was kind of excited to see his new film, Sweet, Sweet Lonely Girl, who basically is a niece. She's taking care of her aunt. Yeah, she's taking care of her aunt who has agoraphobia. Who realizes that has a little bit of money. So, and then she meets her, this new girl, this, friend who she kind of, you know, has a little bit of a thing for, runs at a smooth 76 minutes. The trailer is a little misleading. So don't watch the trailer and be like, oh shit, this looks fucking scary as fuck. No, it's more or less a invasive look at a woman who doesn't have a lot going on for her, who is a little too nice, who is needing a break, who takes a chance on something and abuses it, and some shit happens. But a really great ending, you know, a very cool ending, I must say. It was kind of up my alley. Cinematography is great. The soundtrack is wonderful. So definitely check that out when it hits VOD, probably relatively soon. That seemed like that movie already has distribution. Next up was one of my favorites of the festival, probably in my top five, was The Autopsy of Jane Doe. That stars Amelia Hirsch and Brian Cox, who have the best chemistry I have seen in a movie in a long, long time. These two actors are amazing together. Jesus Christ. They play father and son. They play Corners, who he's Amelia Hirsch is. Is it Amelia Aya or just Emil Hirsch? How does he say it? Emil Hirsch?
Emil Hirsch.
Emil Hirsch. I'm making him sound like a lady. So Emil Hirsch, he's learning and wants to, you know, basically take over the family business, who are working on, you know, suicide to cause determine the death. Wow, that was a mouthful. So they get a call in the very late night from the sheriff saying they have a body. They found it in a basement. And everybody upstairs was murdered. She looks like she's been there for a while. Or they don't say been there for a while. It's just a very odd case because she doesn't really have too much going on with her body to show that how long she's been there and she was buried. So they get her and they are going to find the cause of death. But there's no apparent cause of death at first. So they have to do an autopsy on her. And man, you wouldn't think that a one location movie in an autopsy room is scary, but Jesus Christ, man, this movie is pretty scary.
Put me in an autopsy room and that's enough just to be in an autopsy room.
And, it's such a cool little breakdown of a film. This movie is directed by Andre, Overdahl, who directed Troll Hunter. So this is his follow up, is an American film. That, man, if they released this wide and had a good trailer, this movie would make millions of dollars. And it's comparable to being one of the scarier movies of that are, you know, released. But also, you know, it's just – it's so fucking good. You can't really say anything about it because it's one of – it's almost like a detective movie. They are getting closer and closer to finding out why she's there. And who this Jane Doe really is, and dude, so fucking good.
Cool. Yeah, I saw a lot of positive buzz about that. Plus, they had a cool little display.
Very yeah, they had an
actual autopsy looking display.
Yeah, they had a rubber doll basically with all the guts inside and everything like that. So, I can't recommend the movie enough. It will be pretty big, I think, when it comes out. I hope that hopefully it gets a wide release. I hope, but we'll see. Next up was A Dark Song. It's a movie. This movie was very, very well received and well liked at Fantastic Fest. It just didn't do anything for me. So anyways, it's about a woman who hires this like professional like a cult guy, like a cultist.
A cultist.
And, yeah, and they lock themselves in a house for months to basically do this ritual.
It's a long ritual.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. Hmm. next up was Belief, The Possession of Janet Moses, which is a real account of a I guess in 2007 happened in New Zealand where this family believed that this woman, Janet Moses, was possessed. So they tried doing their own exorcism And she ended up dying, of course, which you find out early on and you look it up. So it's basically a very invasive documentary. It's not actually like – it's not really a documentary. It's a reenactment. Huh. They only have a few people because obviously it what happened was absolutely terrible. So they didn't get to really interview the family. They interviewed like neighbors and stuff. But they reenacted the whole like ritual and stuff like that of how she actually died.
Wow. Yeah, I remember this. I remember reading about that actual story.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan because it's hard to – like you have to here's the cool part about discussing this is because you have to divide yourself that these people have a religion and their religion states that they have to do something. But this is completely, you know, not Greek but foreign, of course, to us. We don't understand. So it's kind of hard to comprehend, be like, wow, these people were kind of silly. You know, I don't want to say anything negative, but, you know, you're sitting there like scratching your head like, Jesus Christ, you're fucking kidding me. Like any normal person would just be like, let's go to the fucking hospital. And this basically goes in depth of Janet Moses' life and what they did, which in itself is terrifying. Mm-hmm. But the director, David Stubbs, dude needs to do a horror film because he did some killer reenactments. Fucking scary at times, too. Next up was Jungle Trap. Man, such a great time. Zach Carlson and Joe Zambia and Annie Choi are amazing, amazing people. So we had Zach Carlson and Joe Zambia on our show a while ago when they were promoting their second film of the Bleeding Skull label called Soul Tangler. Mm-hmm. And during that time, they were talking about their third film that they're releasing called Run Coyote Run, which was directed by James Bryan. The story behind that film was that this guy bought this car, and in the car was some clothes, a boot, and a bag of videotapes. In that bag was like Liar Liar, Austin Powers, and then an unlabeled tape, which was a master copy of a film called Run, Coyote, Run, which is a lost film that James Bryan did. So there was only like 15 of these made, and all of them were destroyed aside from this one. So Joe Zambia and Zach Carlson were able to restore the film and release it. But during that time, they contacted James Bryan, and they were like, hey, so we have this movie. And he was like, oh, shit, that's crazy. That's my lost film. So they go to his house, and they are talking to him. And then Zach Carlson looks over to the side, and he says, since we're doing Run, Coyote, Run, your lost film, I see all these tapes that say Jungle Trap on them. He's like, oh, that's my other lost movie. And so this film was shot on video. It was never edited together, never scored, just filmed, and that's it.
Wow.
So they were like, okay, well, we want to release that too. So they got together. They hired an editor to edit the film. Joe Zambia and Annie Choi composed music for the film. And James Bryan was in the theater watching the premiere of his own movie that he's never seen.
That's amazing.
And this dude was like, he's old, but yeah. Man, he was so like after the screening, he was like, you could tell like he was about to cry. Like he was so thankful. He loved the music. He loved the movie. He was glad everybody was digging it and laughing and having a good time. It's insane.
That's fine. I love hearing stories like that. That's cool.
Yeah, it was just like he was just so excited that this was able to happen, and it was amazing that they were able to edit this film and compose it and totally make it feel like it was made in 1990.
Nice.
Quite the experience. That will be available on Bleeding Skull, and I think they do DVDs now. But yeah, VHS, DVD, also they have VHX, so you can, not VHS, VHX, which you can buy the film digitally. Next up, I wish I was able to talk to BJ about this one because she loved, this lady's first film, Midnight Swim, which is directed by Sarah Smith, who had her new film called Buster's Mal Heart that played at Fantastic Fest. And she basically said this is her like kind of love letter to Donnie Darko in a way, which is about a man who's not named Buster. His name's Noah. I don't know. His name's not Buster. They call him Buster because he basically does pranks on the radio and stuff like that. So anyways, he is a mountain man who is on the run from police because he'll break into people's homes and just kind of live there while they're gone. Doesn't really hurt anybody, but is kind of a nuisance to the world. It's a linear story that's playing with his past as well. So you start when he is had a family and a kid, and his events that bring him to why he's like that. The film is beautiful. It has a great screenplay. The acting is superb. I was not a fan of the ending. However, I think a lot of people dug it. But definitely something to check out. Extremely funny too. Sarah Smith is a really great writer. I enjoyed Midnight Swim, and I know people will enjoy her bigger adventure with Buster's Mal Heart.
So this stars is it Rami Malek?
Yeah, apparently he's in a show called Mr. Robot.
He's in Mr. Robot, yeah, and he was in Short Term 12.
Oh,
as well.
So apparently he plays the same characters he does in Mr. Robot, which a lot of people, I guess, were upset by. But I never watched that show, so I thought he was great.
He's not – on IMDb, at least, they don't have a character name for him.
Oh, his name's like Noah or something like that. You don't actually – I think they say it a couple times, but he's mostly known as Buster.
Okay.
So next up is one of my favorite films of the festival and probably of the year, which is also going to be marked as one of the more fucked up films ever to exist on the planet.
Yeah.
So it is called We Are the Flesh. Holy fuck. If you remember on Twitter last month, I said my most anticipated films, and one of them was We Are the Flesh. So I started getting these messages from this guy on Twitter asking, is it true that you get to see the brother and sister do an explicit blowjob scene? And clicking on his profile, you got to see that he asked everybody this question because he really wanted to know. And if you're listening, sir, there's extremely explicit blowjob scene in the film. It's just not explicit. It's very explicit. It is about a man who is living, you don't know where he's living. He's in a building. He is liquefying chicken. He is doing something in order to survive. He's making a abandoned building his own home. Then two siblings come inside, and he offers them a way to survive in this world. In that world, they have a really fucked up life. If you are offended by movies, I highly suggest you don't watch this movie. If you're uncomfortable by explicit stuff, I suggest you don't watch this movie. I've seen a lot of movies in my life, and I love to watch fucked up shit to see if it, you know, is actually fucked up. Top five, at least, fucked up movies I've ever seen. You can't really go more into it because it's almost like an experimental film at times. And if you do watch it, at least watch it till the end, like every movie. But this film really is one of those films where it's like you watch the end and you're like, okay, all right, you got me.
I guess that was worth it. Dear God Almighty.
Yeah, it's so fucking good.
It's only 79 minutes long, so.
Yeah, it's a long 79 minutes, man. I mean,
let's just say some of the key words here, because I'm bringing up each film on IMDb just so I have a reference here. Some of the plot key words include pubic hair, vagina, and death.
Yeah. that's a good way to put it. You see a lot of that.
Penis is in there as well. If you click see all, the word penis.
You see it all. Trust me.
Nice. Okay.
But such a fantastic movie. The lead actor who plays the man that's because no one really has names, I don't think. Yeah. I think the brother and sister have names. But
Maria and Mariano.
Yeah. So, man. Artsploitation? You need to get on this because no one's going to fucking touch this movie.
This actually would be a perfect for them.
Yeah.
It's weird how some labels have, like, you're like, you think of a movie, you're like, oh, like, okay.
I think everybody's going to be afraid to touch it.
Yeah.
Because it's got some really heavy shit in it.
Hmm. Okay.
And to the point where it is very pornographic.
Yeah.
Like, literally pornographic. So. It was amazing. Next up is Headshot, which is, I guess, by the fight choreographers of The Raid, that stars the guy from The Raid. His name's, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Ikeoyawas. That's the best I could
director?
Do. Yeah, this is directed by
Stan Boyle and Timo.
Yeah, they did a movie called Killers a couple years ago. I think they're the fight choreographers for The Raid. I don't know. Anyways, it's Raid-esque. So anyways, it is about a man that's shot in the head who didn't die, who forgets who he is, and then slowly realizes that he was kind of part of a massive gang.
And drug he realizes board. He was actually has an adamantium skeleton and...
This isn't a
Wolverine follow-up?
Bone-crushing.
Bad joke.
Bone-shattering action film. A really fun action movie, and I'll put it at that.
Nice. I'm excited for this one.
A lot of people loved it. Next up was a documentary called S for Stanley, which is on Stanley Kubrick, which is actually not a movie about Stanley Kubrick.
Mm.
It is a film about... this guy named Emilio Assolandro, who you find out was Stanley's best friend. And he was a major help to Stanley Kubrick's career. He was his driver. He was his messenger. He was his do-all. Very, very cute and sweet film. Emilio is still alive. And so it's basically... starting from the beginning of how when he first met Stanley to the very, 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 very end. Very, very cute. You get a little misty-eyed watching it. Very sweet. Just a backstory of his life and Stanley's life and them working together. And how you kind of find out that Emilio was a big part of why Stanley Kubrick made Eyes Wide Shut. A little fun moment, not a spoiler, is that, you know, Emilio wanted to retire many times, but Stanley wouldn't let him because he was like, you know, you're everything to me. You help me do everything. And Emilio wanted to continue with his life and move and, you know, not have that really crazy movie life. So he retired, and then years later he met Stanley Kubrick, and Stanley was working on a movie before he left, and he's like, hey, how'd that movie go? And he's like, I never made it. You left. And so he was like, I'll make it if you come back to work with me. And so Emilio went back to work for a couple years so he could make Eyes Wide Shut.
Wow.
But anyways, it's Eyes Wide Shut in a way. There's a lot of things that are tributes to Emilio that you wouldn't know watching the movie without knowing that story. Emilio's in the film. He's got restaurants named after him and all this other stuff. Like, you get to really see this is a true bromance that happened. So very sweet film. Next up was another film that is – this is probably my number one for the festival. I ate raw meat during this movie because they served raw meat. It is by Juliana Durcanau, who is a French filmmaker. It is her first feature film. It is a...
What's it called?
It's called Raw.
Oh, well...
Sorry, I don't think I said that. So it is about a young woman, lady. I'll say girl, because it is... She's 16, I guess she goes to college. So she goes to veterinarian school, which most of her family are veterinarians. Her sister is a senior at the college. She is in her freshman year, and they are all vegetarians. And she's a hardcore vegetarian. And slowly she realizes that she loves meat, and not just any meat, humans.
Huh.
So it's a coming of age feminist thriller drama about sisterhood and becoming a woman and learning that you like to eat people.
Sounds very sweet.
So it is so fucking good. It's unbelievable. Great score. The acting is top notch. It's bloody. It's gross. It's the music is absolutely amazing. Everything about the movie is great. Literally one of the one of the most perfect films. Everything about it, from the opening to the ending, for everything in between, it's beautifully shot. The story, the dialogue, the characters, everything about this movie is 100%. Like, it's so fucking good. So definitely watch Raw. Two of the more fucked up movies of Fantastic Fest were my favorites, so that tells a lot about me.
Nice.
So next up was one of my Indian films that I saw called Psycho Ramen. For anybody that follows, it's called Ramen Raghav 2.0, I guess, in India. It is about a guy. It's about a serial killer. Not here. Let me put it this way. There was a serial killer by the name of Ramen in the 60s who, I think this is real, who murdered a bunch of people. The movie is not about him. It's about a guy who takes on his name. And is probably one of the better actors I've seen in any movie, and one of the most intimidating motherfuckers I've ever witnessed on camera. It's bloody. It's suspenseful. It has a side story with this police officer who is kind of the co-star of the film, which I really didn't like. I wish that it focused more on Ramen, which would have made the movie probably about an hour shorter, which would have been a good running time probably, because I think it overstays its welcome a little bit. But definitely a fun film. It's newer. It's not because the repertory screenings for all the Indian films that played were mostly repertory screenings. This was one of the new ones. Next up was Dog Eat Dog, who stars. Let me break this cast down for you. Nicolas Cage and Willem Dafoe.
Wow.
Willem Dafoe is playing basically every role that Nicolas Cage plays, and Nicolas Cage is playing every role that Willem Dafoe plays. So in the first 5 minutes, you get to see Willem Dafoe do coke and beat the shit out of his wife. That's the type of movie you're watching. So Paul Schrader made a lot of great films back in the day. I think he's kind of fell off the wagon a little bit, especially with this film. It's about three basically guys who get out of prison, who work together and trying to live a normal life. And they're all friends and they're all crazy. Yeah, it's like
we're talking about the director of Taxi Driver here, right?
Yeah.
Is the director of Taxi Driver, or did he write Taxi Driver?
No, Martin Scorsese directed.
He wrote Taxi it. Driver. Sorry.
Yeah, he wrote Taxi Driver.
I meant I'm looking at a bunch of things. He wrote Taxi Driver, but he directed American Gigolo.
Yeah, I mean, his past few films, Dying of the Light or something, and then he made The Canyons, which was terrible.
Dying of the Light got horrible reviews.
Yeah, so like he hasn't been doing too well past few years. So when I heard that he had a movie with Willem Dafoe and Nicolas Cage, I was already intrigued. I can't say if the movie's good because it's not. However, don't let that be like, oh, Brad said this wasn't good, because that's not the truth at all. It is an experience. It's like watching someone who really loves David Lynch trying to make a movie. I kind of want to say this. This is not a spoiler. So in the film, this makes you want to watch the movie. All right. So this, listen, don't skip this, because this will make you want to watch the movie. In Dog Eat Dog, Nicolas Cage character is really obsessed with Humphrey Bogart. And in the film, the last 20 minutes, Nicolas Cage isn't playing the character anymore. He starts playing as Humphrey Bogart in a Humphrey Bogart accent to kind of this film noir acting just out of nowhere.
Wow.
The backstory of that thing is that apparently Nicolas Cage did it by himself with no direction and was told not to do it, but wouldn't break character. So Paul Schrader was forced to film Nicolas Cage as this Humphrey Bogart character that's completely out of left field, that doesn't match the movie, and takes the movie to a weird, weird spiral.
That's Nick Cage for you, man.
So anyways, let that just be a part of it. That's how crazy this fucking movie is. Moving along, next is Reborn, which is Takasakiguchi's kind of, comeback back to cinema. Takasakiguchi originally came on the scene around 2000 with Ryo Kitamura's film called Versus, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. Therefore, he did a few movies afterwards, acted till about 2010, even before that, he retired. He came out of retirement for Sion Sono's film, Why Don't You Play in Hell? And then he retired again. And now he's back. Takasakiguchi is about 40 years old. He teamed up with the choreographers from Versus to make a Ultimate Fighting movie. They say that they created a new martial arts for the film. It is basically a movie where Takasakiguchi kills like over 500 people.
Okay.
There's a lot of fucking death in this movie. but anyways, it's a fun little action movie, I guess. It wasn't for me. I was really stoked for it because I love Takasakiguchi. But anyways, that's it. Next up was, Science Fiction Volume 1, The Osiris Child. Which I'm pretty sure this movie, when it comes out, it's just going to be called The Osiris Child, probably part one or something. So it's by Shane Abbas, who directed Infinity and Gabriel, which I spoke a lot about on the show. I found out he was directing this. I was immediately there. This guy can make a huge sci-fi epic film with a dollar. So, and that's what he does, is he makes a brilliant and it's very basic science fiction film, but has great characters and amazing special effects. So basically it is about this officer who is leaves his post to save his daughter on this planet. Because they were wanting to colonize this planet with terraformers. And it turns out that the creatures that they were breeding broke loose and they are going to nuke the planet. Because these creatures are they'll kill everything in its path. They're like called Ravengers or something like that. And they're huge and they just eat and kill everything. So he is basically abandons his post, rushes to the planet, befriends Kellan Lutz, who is not a good actor, but is great in this fucking movie. So bravo to Kellan Lutz, who plays a really fucking good action role. Also, it has Daniel McPherson, who is in Infinity, who does a great job as well. It's Luke Ford. He plays Luke Ford. Anyways, so it is basically an action film where he goes down to this planet that is being sieged by these creatures who this movie has the best fucking creature effects I've seen in ever.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, everything's practical. These creatures are fucking huge, man. Nice. I mean, we're talking about take the biggest creature that you saw in every Star Wars movie or something that's all practical and like amplify that by 5. These things move. They're amazing looking. They're huge. They're all huge animatronic people. Like, and he's basically, it's a guy in a suit, but all this fucking shit on him, man. I mean, it looks incredible.
Awesome. Totally piqued my interest just now.
Yeah. Great. Great special effects, all futuristic, everything from the dog fighting in the sky. This is the Shane Abbas's big epic. And I imagine this is, apparently it's a first part of a trilogy. I really, really hope this thing takes off or he has funding for the rest of them because it is a fantastic film. And very emotional at times.
Cool.
A lot of people, it was kind of mixed reviews because I think people are like, this is super basic. Well, it is. It is a very basic premise. You have to look. This is because I think they look at it and be like, wow, this guy made this $50 million movie and didn't really have much of a story. Well, here's a little tip. Shane Abbas probably made it for like under $1 million. And you think it looks like $50 million. Because I think Infinity wasn't even that big of a budget, and that movie looks spectacular.
It looks great, yeah.
So he would not disclose – because a question that's frowned upon in Q&As is, hey, what was your budget? and no one wants to answer that question just because it's a dumb question. However, I think that was completely relevant in this Q&A, but he wouldn't answer. I'm really curious. I really hope that I find out because I think it's probably under $1 million because it's super independent. I don't see him having a big budget for it, but he knows how to stretch a dollar. And I think there's a little poke at the Antwoord and Chappie at this because we have two characters. We have two characters that are very, very reminiscent to the Antwoord, but a great film. Next up was Down Under. Which is another definitely one of my top movies of the festival. It is about a true story that happened in Australia where Australians wanted to basically very racist against Muslims. So the film is about two sides, Australian Muslims and Australians. And about how one night they decide that each group is going to get together and beat the shit out of another group. Very racist, but has a very comedic tone. Some people didn't find it like being a comedy, which you laugh in the film, but it's not really a comedy because it is very serious and completely relevant of what we are doing today. And makes you realize that racism exists everywhere and has always existed and is not going anywhere, sadly. But it's extremely funny, very offensive, and very, very good. It's very odd that this director was able to pull off a black comedy about a very, very serious subject and have some very serious things happen, but you still laugh about them. Next up was The Secret Screening, which turned out to be Split, M. Night Shyamalan's new film. This is the world premiere. This movie was just edited a week before Fantastic Fest.
Wow.
And M. Night was very thankful that they let him premiere the movie there. It is about James McAvoy is the lead in it, and it's about him having multiple personalities, DID disorder. And he kidnaps three teenage girls, and he has split personalities. So they're headed by one personality, which is Kevin. And each time that he visits the girls, he is a different personality. So they try to manipulate his personalities in order to escape. However, Kevin alludes to that there is a thing coming for them called the Beast. And that's where they'll meet their demise.
Hmm.
Apparently in the trailer, very well known what the Beast is and who is the Beast. And that's about it.
All right.
It got rave reviews because of the last 2 minutes of the film. I will say that. So don't turn it off after the credits.
Wait, there's something that happens after the credits?
Yeah.
And because of that, it got rave reviews?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Harry Knowles asked the question. This is the dumbest question I've ever heard in a Q&A. And Harry Knowles, who, of course, runs Ain't It Cool News, asked it. He asked, is it okay if we spoil the end of the film in our review?
Fucking. He
he wanted to know if he could actually say what you hear and see.
Of all people.
Yeah.
He's the one that asked.
Yeah, apparently.
That's a rookie mistake.
Dude, it's going to get spoiled, but honestly, it's not that big of a deal. So next up was a Korean film called Asura, The City of Madness, which is another bone-crunching film. A lot of dialogue-heavy. The plot is basically a cop accidentally murders another cop and is being tossed around from the gangsters who know the truth and the police department and the mayor. He's working for both sides, but neither side know he's working for the other. And he gets himself into some deep shit, and it ends up in a bloody, bloody fucking battle. Some great fight scenes. Great car chase, a lot of great things. Next up was, I got to see the world or US premiere of Shin Godzilla, the new Godzilla film that's out from Japan. It is a Godzilla movie, and, Godzilla has googly eyes and he looks super weird.
wait, what?
Dude, it's like they pasted googly eyes on Godzilla. Not like, when he's like fully Godzilla, he like develops throughout the film, but he looks like he has googly eyes. It's really funny. It looks awful.
Cause people are really, really raving.
Here's the thing.
I'm a fan of the remake, and people say, finally, this is like, fuck the remake. Like, this is finally a good Godzilla movie, but it's a Godzilla movie is a Godzilla movie, man.
Well, here's the thing is that Shin Godzilla is like 2 hours and 2 hours long.
Oof.
It is the most dialogue heavy movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
Like literally, it's not for Godzilla movie. There's so much goddamn meetings and stuff. Like it's almost to the part where it's funny and you're laughing because they just cut scene to a different boardroom talking about Godzilla. Godzilla does go apeshit twice, and that's what people raved about, but I've never seen so much talking and so much text on the screen to the point where everybody was laughing. Everybody's having a good time because it's absolutely fucking ridiculous.
I'm seeing pictures of the googly eyes.
Yeah. So next up was Bad Robots, Restoration of Phantasm, which I missed at South by Southwest because I was deathly sick. Quick backstory on that real quick. If you don't know, when J.J. Abrams was doing Star Wars, he has, of course, a character, Captain Phasma, in the film. And it's kind of like an homage to Phantasm. Of course, the spear, you know, Captain Phasma's helmet. So he contacted Don Coscarelli and asked for a print of the film so he could screen it for the Star Wars crew, which is super badass. But Coscarelli gave him bad news, saying, well, there actually is no good print of the film. They are pretty much all fucked. Right before 1980, the film that they were using, the Kodak, 35, it would turn red. So a lot of films, they would just be all the, it would bleed and it'd be like, have this reddish fade all to it. So J.J. Abrams was like, fuck that shit, and grabbed what he could, and they remastered it themselves from whatever prints they could have. And that's where Phantasm Remastered came. And then Wellgo, of course, picked up Phantasm and Phantasm Ravager. The print is gorgeous. It sounds absolutely fantastic. The gunshots, the spears flying through the air, boy, all that sounds fucking incredible.
They did some like kind of wire removal cleanup too, right? Kind of like some people were complaining about that, but they did a few little digital removal of some things, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, they're saying there was some digital stuff done in there, but hey, it looks fantastic.
I think more along the lines of like how they when they remastered Blade Runner, they just took out some wires and
yeah,
nothing like the freaking what Lucas did to Star Wars.
Yeah, so it looks great. Can't wait for people to see it. I think cool. Everybody's pleased that or is at the theater seeing the remastered. Next was is that a bird or is that
that's
Noah?
That's my goddamn kids, man. They are. I don't know what they're doing. Let's just hope my house does not burn down throughout the rest of the podcast.
It sounds like a bird, like a cockatiel.
It's having a 4-year-old scream. It's just like, thank God I'm not out in there. That's all I got to say.
Sounds fun.
Parenthood.
Then after midnight. The next morning at 11 o'clock, I got to see Phantasm Ravager. Now, this film is up for big debate with me. I've been a lifelong Phantasm fan since I was younger when I very first watched the original Phantasm. Phantasm is batshit. It's has this huge nightmarish quality to it to where it is scary. Like, there are some scary moments in the film. To the point where, like, when Tall Man chases Jody to, not Jody, what's the kid's name? Jody's the older brother than Reggie.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I've been waiting for a decent, Blu-ray to rewatch it.
Oh, Mike. His name's Mike. Cool. So, like, you know, chasing Mike being in the funeral parlor. I mean, just everything. There's a lot of scary moments in the film. And I love the sequel and the third one. That trilogy alone, we won't talk too much about 4 because that one we'll give a free pass to 4. The original trilogy is superb. It's a, you know, all the films are connected. Like, as soon as one ends, the other one picks up and it just continues. And I love the film so much. So when I remember hearing about after, you know, Oblivion came out in the 90s, for years Coscarelli was talking about a movie, the fifth one, called Phantasm's End. That's what it was called at the time. It was like a group of military guys go after the Tall Man of futuristic world, which everybody was down for. Sadly enough, that never really happened. And I guess the project just sat there. Finally, this guy, David Hartman, who is an animator for Disney, wanted to kind of pick up where, you know, Reggie and Mike and Jody all left off with the Tall Man. And make the fifth and final Phantasm film. So it was like 8 years in production, though. About, a year and a half ago, we saw like a teaser trailer out of nowhere. Yeah. Everybody fucking flipped. And it premiered. Now, people didn't like it. I'll just be upfront about that. There is a lot of negativity from the film. That it looked cheap. It's just bad. And I'll say this. The film isn't great, it's not good, but it's not terrible. It is made solely for the fans of Phantasm, it feels like. If you went in this movie blind, you would probably turn it off in 15 minutes, maybe less. But there's enough fanfare in it. There's enough stuff between Jody and Jody and Mike and Reggie. You know, Angus Scrimm's final performance. I mean, what a better way for Angus Scrimm to go out and then reprising his role as a tall man.
Yeah.
It's a batshit fucking crazy story. It's low budget. You know, people were complaining, oh, it's cheap, it's low budget, and the acting's bad. Well, I was like, well, if you think that, then you think all the other Phantasms are terrible because it's the same fucking actors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these guys are enjoying what they're doing. You could tell Reggie is really into what he's doing. You could tell that Mike is wanting to come back. You know, it's like hanging out with old friends.
Is this one of the few sequels or few series that, like, every movie has this pretty much the same characters and is following them throughout?
Yeah, the only thing that changes is that in Phantasm 2, you know, the guy who played Mike, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, he didn't come back.
Okay.
And it was reprised by – or not reprised, but another actor stood in place.
Yeah.
It's actually originally supposed to be Brad Pitt, and Brad Pitt dropped out, and then this other guy took over. But then, you know, Mike came back for the third and fourth and fifth one.
Okay.
So, but it's fun. It's has enough fanfare. It has enough tie-ins to the original. There's cameos in the film. That's great. You know, a lot of practical blood. But there's a lot of heavy, heavy, heavy duty, you know, effects, computer effects.
Yeah.
And it looks like you might be playing like a 1995 video game. You know, kind of like how I remember a game called Earth Siege. If anybody remembers, Earth Siege 2 is pretty popular. It was like 96. And, you know, the cutaway cinematics with the, you know, digital fire in the background with, you know, they were using real people for their cutscenes, you know? That's kind of what Phantasm Ravager looks like.
Is it sci-fi level, sci-fi channel level, or a little bit better than that?
It's a little worse. but here's the thing, is that I don't want anybody not to watch this. People are going to watch it. They're going to dislike it. I know that. But for hardcore Phantasm fans, this is something that you're going to sit back and be like, okay, I enjoyed it for this and what it was worth. I'm not going to sit there and think it's awful. It's the fifth movie. I had fun with it. The actors have fun with it. You know, it pays so much respect to the originals. It keeps your batshit crazy story. You know, it's a fun fifth movie made, what, 1979, 2016. Mm-hmm. I mean, what more do you want? This movie's not going to have a big budget because it's fucking Phantasm. The movie's never had a big budget. They were all DIY attitudes.
Yeah.
You know, they never made a ton of money. I mean, their Part 1 and 2 were popular at the time, but I think even Part 4 had a home video release. It never actually went to the theater.
Yeah.
Next up was The High Frontier, which was a thriller set in the snow. Ultimately, I think this guy was a big fan of The Thing and kind of wanted to do something along the lines of that. Not a horror film by any means. A very basic story about two brothers and their father that go up to the mountains to have a vacation. And they find a drifter, and the drifter has kind of a dark past. And it kind of unfolds right there in the cabin. It's from Norway, so it's really pretty. It's got some you know, awesome music. It's just a decent movie. Next up was Safe Neighborhood, which brought the house down the first night, and then it played again, but it played like on four screens because people were obsessed with this.
Wow.
I need to watch it again. It didn't do it for me, but I tell you what, man, this is like the hit of the festival, it seemed. It's by Chris Peckover, who did a movie called Undocumented in about 2010. That movie was okay. Anyways, it is a Christmas kind of horror thriller of I know, it already sounds great. with a babysitter who's taking care of this, you know, kiddie's about 12. Parents are going on a Christmas party, and they deal with a home invasion with a twist. It's like, I know right now you're probably jacking off saying, oh my God, Brad, show me this movie. I just didn't dig it. I think the first half of the movie is a lot better. It's a really dark comedy as well, so it's not like really a total horror film. It's more like a comedy thriller. I know people will love it. I know you'll love it. It just, I don't think it was for me. I'm going to give it another chance, though. We'll see. I tell you one thing that's really fun is that the guy, Chris Beckover, really loves Home Alone. It's like a really mean, like, Home Alone.
Okay.
There's even a line in the movie. Did you just Home Alone that guy? So yeah, it's fun in that aspect. It just overall it didn't do it for me. But like I said, I might have been grumpy that day, which is every day. Next up was the sequel to Wolf Cop.
Yeah,
called Another Wolf Cop, who has the best theatrical poster I have seen since birth. The dude design.
Since you saw the Cobra.
Yeah, the guy took the Cobra poster, Dune Designs, and basically made a Wolf Cop poster out of it, and put "Sequels Are to the Disease, Meet the Cure." This movie is total fun. It's exactly what the first one was wanting to be, I guess. It's just it took them a while to actually get to the Wolf Cop, because I think the Wolf Cop portion of the film was a lot better than the beginning of the film.
Yeah,
so he's just full Wolf Cop on this time. You know, a lot of returning characters. Astron 6 has a cameo.
Oh, nice.
Kevin Smith plays a kind of a larger role in the film.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Kevin Smith is in the film a little bit.
Wow. I can't wait for all the Kevin Smith haters to hate Wolf Cop, Another Wolf Cop, just because of that.
Yeah, it was funny because people, like, after the movie, they're like, I guess someone Kevin Smith owes money.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm pretty sure he got $0 for Another Wolf Cop. Movie costs like $15,000 to make. I highly doubt he got anything. Next up was Sadako versus Keiko, which is the The Ring Grudge versus movie.
My God.
So if anybody doesn't know this exists, J-Horror was run into the ground in the late 2000s. J-Horror was great between 95 and 2000.
Yeah.
I am a huge J-Horror fan. I will school you on knowledge. I love those movies until they got a little silly when we got Ju-On 18.
Well, thank God The Ring versus The Grudge isn't silly at all.
So when this was first announced at like TIFF and then was announced at Fantastic Fest, I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this movie can't be good. Like, are programmers trolling their audiences? No, it's fun. It really is. It's not as eventful as you would think it would be, but it's just, I think the filmmakers even know, like, oh man, what are we going to do now? Well, let's just pit them against one another. Let's have someone watch the tape in the house of Ju-On.
Why not?
And then let the ghosts fight one another. So, like, it's fun. It was actually really funny listening, talking to a group of people, because they were in the film. They talk about urban legends. You know, they talk about the Death House, which is the Ju-On story, and then they talk about the cursed videotape, which is the Ring of. But they have all these other ones like Hanako on the toilet, and they're like, "Haha, man, that'd be funny if that was a movie." And I'm like, "There is a movie called Hanako the Toilet Ghost."
Nice.
Yes. There's a lot of J-horror films that are not well known, like you know, Ju-On, which I keep saying Ju-On, but it's The Grudge, people. It's also known as a curse. It's where it all comes from.
Yeah.
And of course, Sadako. Sadako is the name of the girl in The Ring. You know her as Samara in The Ring remake. So, anyways, it's fun. It's exactly what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to make you laugh. It's goofy. If you like those films, even if you don't like the films, I got a great response at the festival. I was surprised of how many people dug it. Next up was Fraud, which is one of the most interesting, quote unquote, documentaries I've seen. It's not really a documentary. It got nominated for Documentary Award, and a lot of people were pissed. So this movie is completely comprised of YouTube footage. It is a filmmaker who was found this couple who documented their entire lives, pretty much. And a good portion of this all uploaded to YouTube. A normal family going through normal things, just posting their videos online. He had a lot of footage. He took the footage and reworked it. So this footage that he compiles together looks like these are two criminals with children that are doing way illegal things to commit insurance fraud and are on the run from the police to Canada. It's made to show you how normal footage can be twisted into making you look bad. I wasn't there for the premiere. I was there during the second screening, and the director was gone. It wasn't introduced properly. So after I watched it, I was like, wait, did we just watch an hour footage of people commit insurance fraud for dick shit? Like, what the fuck? Like, how is this good? I was pissed. And then afterwards, one of the programmers said, oh, no, that's all fake. Like, it's all fake. It's just made to look like that. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, that makes a lot more sense. So anyways, really interesting that you can take just normal footage and make people out to be insurance frauds.
You see it happen all the time with people recutting trailers. Like Mary Poppins looked like a horror movie. And
it's all
about how you manipulate the footage.
Yeah. And it's not great, but it's really is interesting.
That's an interesting take on. I mean, you see this all the time. And I mean, every political season, you see this crap with both sides trying to attack each other. I mean, it's something that happens a lot.
Right. Next up, this movie is supposed to be been drinking. Damn. So this movie was supposed to be released in October. It got pushed back all the way to January. And we were able to see the world premiere of John Boyega's A Monster Calls, which he directed The Orphanage and The Impossible. This has Sigourney Weaver, Liam Neeson. That's pretty much it.
Why'd they push this back to January? You remember January is kind of the graveyard
for Oscar season, I think is what they said.
Okay.
So, we're fortunate to see it. I couldn't believe they only played it once. And, I was fortunate enough to see it, be in the theater when they screened it. If you watch the trailer, good luck of surviving because you'll cry.
It looks great.
It is, if anybody knows, it's based on a book. If you read any, it's a kid's book, about a boy whose mother is dying. And through his drawings and through his imagination, he develops this monster from a tree who is going to tell him three stories. And then the fourth story has to be the kid. He's got to tell a story to this tree, which is the monster. And the monster's there to heal. It's a healing monster. And he, through his stories, he tells these bad stories that happened to these people and how he healed them. It's pretty devastating, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't as heavy as I thought it was going to be, but it's still... still pretty fucking sad. So next up was I'm going to skip one film to talk about it last.
Okay.
Because I actually talked about these in order to how I saw them. Aside from this one, I'm going to talk about the closing night film first and then talk about this other film last because it's a lot better, which a lot of people don't think so. So Nacho Vigalondo's film premiered at Fantastic Fest closing night film called Colossal, which Nacho Vigalondo directed Open Windows, which wasn't very fun. He directed Time Crimes, which I absolutely adore, I love, and he directed Extraterrestrial, which I love and adore as well, and all his short films are great. Open Windows was the only film I didn't really care too much.
Well, it's okay. It's I like the idea of Open Windows.
This film brought down the house again. It was a film I was not 100% on. It's definitely due for a rewatch. A lot of backstory to this film. He apparently had a reshoot. Not reshoot, but just kind of make a new monster because he made it a little too close to Godzilla, because even the poster is very Godzilla-like. So basically, it is – it sounds like I'm fucking with you when I tell you this plot, but I'm not fucking with you. This is the honest to God's truth what the film's about. We have the beautiful Anne Hathaway, who is living in New York, and she's kind of a drunk. She lives with the awesome Dan Stevens, a.k.a. the Terminator from The Guest. Her life is kind of flip-flopping. He's tired of it. He kicks her out. She moves back to her hometown, which she was really good friends with a character who's played by Jason Sudeikis, who's from, you know, SNL and stuff. He does a great job, by the way. Great actor, actually.
Sweet.
Goes back, kind of tries to get her life together, and, you know, tries to find a job and everything like that. Meanwhile, if she's at this certain place at a certain time, she has this ability to cause this monster to show up in Seoul and attack buildings. But whatever she does in this area, you know, in this like playground area, which she can emit this, whenever she's there, the monster appears and she can destroy the city. And she slowly realizes this. This is a comedy, by the way. It's not like an action fucking thriller or anything. But she can control the monster from where she is. And it's about her life trying to get it back together while dealing with this crazy fucking thing. Not for me, but, I have my reasons. But I can't, of course, express them on the show because I would be giving stuff away. Definitely up for a rewatch just to see if I dig it the second time.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I am completely alone on this. I didn't meet one person that disliked the film. I was solely, no pun intended, because it takes place in Seoul. right. I was alone, 100%. So I might be doing something wrong. Next up, and finally, the film I saw before Colossal that I fucking love, was Mike Mendez, the motherfucker behind Grave Dancers and A Big Ass Spider and some other awesome B fucking movies. Fucking Don't Kill It. Fucking Dolph Lundgren plays the lead. I've never seen Dolph Lundgren have so much goddamn fun on screen. Nice. This movie is a horror film. It is about a demon that you can't kill the person because it inhabits the person that it kills. So you can't kill it unless you want to be possessed by this demon. Of course, Dolph Lundgren is the badass that is a demon hunter who's hunting this demon since he was little. Goes into a small town and it's going to raise hell. This movie is fun. It has the best one-liners. Dolph Lundgren is having so much goddamn fun. Mike Mendez really knows how to make a fun little throwback movie. It's awesome. And I can't wait for people to see it. It's goofy, it's cheap, it's cheesy, all that kind of stuff too. So don't like think it's going to be the fucking Bad Boys 2 of, you know, action movies or some shit. Because nothing beats Bad Boys 2, aside from maybe Smokin' Aces. I do like Smokin' Aces. But, you know, a fun little horror comedy with Dolph Lundgren completely embracing this role, which was fantastic. I wish I could have been there at the premiere because apparently it was really fun. Mike Mendez and Dolph Lundgren got along really well, and you can tell it on screen.
that everybody's having a good time.
Very cool.
But yeah, that was Fantastic Fest.
Damn, man.
There's a lot of films I didn't see, that got crazy good, you know, reviews and people loved, but you could only see so much while you're there.
Yes.
So, you know, slowly I will, be seeing other films, when they come out on VOD. Sometimes, you know, you have to be, don't get a little upset, write these down so you don't forget them. I'll talk about the ones that I love when they're, when they come out.
I'm putting all of these into the show notes, by the way, and I'm putting little asterisks by the ones that you loved.
Yeah, so, my top 10 would be, Autopsy of Jane Doe, Down Under, We Are the Flesh, Raw, and Science Fiction Volume 1, The Osiris Child. But those were probably my top five of the fest. Very diverse lineup this year. There was a lot of crazy shit that played. Stuff that I still wanted to see, but I just couldn't get around to it because there's not enough time in a day. Another film that everybody loved that played, that I didn't get to see was The Girl with All the Gifts, which is a young adult novel, but people are comparing, they're saying this is the new, like, 28 Days Later type thing. So, pretty excited of checking that out.
Very cool.
There's, plenty of films that, you know, I still want to see. And I'll track down when they slowly come out.
Awesome. So. Derek Smith has also been covering some Fantastic Fest movies for the site over at thescreamcast.com. So check those out, what he's been putting up. He interviewed Ivan Tverosky,
director Zoology.
Of Zoology. He also...
Which was picked up by U.S. Aero and U.K.
Sweet.
Arrow picked that up.
He also reviewed Nova Seed, Greasy Strangler, Zoology, and some other stuff. I think that's it so far. He's going to be submitting a bunch of other reviews, so we'll have more reviews popping up on the website there. Speaking of the website, we're doing an experiment with enamel pins. Brad's been talking with me about this for a while, and Brad has some really great ideas, knows a really great artist, so we figured, what the hell, let's try to make an enamel pin. So if you go to screamcast.com/, or just click on the store button, don't click the drop-down products button, because that's broken and I can't seem to remove it. I don't know, I'm working out some bugs here. But click on the store button, it'll take you to our store, and you'll see Oily Enamel Pin. It's a 1.5-inch enamel pin designed by Omar, is it Hoxson?
Hey, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Based on his popular, he did some prints called Garbage Flesh Eaters, were a bunch of kind of Garbage Pail Kid inspired prints. This was one of them, and it's of course a take on the Tar Man from Return of the Living Dead. So really cool design, and we're selling them for $10 shipped over there for US. There's a charge for international, and they're limited to 100. So grab them while you can. You know, just experiment. Brad, you have a bunch of other ideas that you've been talking.
We have quite a bit. So if it does well, we will be doing this more frequently.
Yeah, a lot of fun ones.
We know it's going to take some time to get off the ground, but I mean, so far we can't really complain because, I mean, we're brand new, and you know, of course. You know, people are always apprehensive about,
especially like
dropping money on something.
A podcast with an enamel pin? What the hell? But I don't know. There's just some of these ideas are so great and no one else is doing them, so we might as well give this a shot. So that's up there. That's a way for you to support the podcast there. Another way you can support the podcast, of course, is go to our sponsors page. There's at thescreamcast.com, click on sponsors, and give Vinegar Syndrome some love. I talked about Horror Pack earlier. Of course, I plugged Coffee Shop of Horrors, and the Grindhouse Video. But also, Wolfmen of Mars, they just had a new album come out, so give them a check out. Check out their music and check out Kevin Spencer's art that he does. So all those links are on the site there. And just give them some love. That's a way you can help us out by kind of, you know, these people have kind of partnered with us and, you know, just a way for them to know that that they are loved by you guys. So I think that's all the announcements I had for stuff to talk about. Yeah?
Mm.
We've been trying to get this Vinegar Syndrome show together. We have a bunch.
It'll happen.
Bunch of stuff to watch the past 2 months. Their new pack just came out, but we're gonna try to get the last 2 months covered. And man, they're gonna have a hell of an October. So I'm excited about that. We'll probably maybe combine September and October because it's a lot of fun stuff to talk about there for the next one. But we'll be doing that very soon. So keep an eye out. And all you guys. Have a fantastic week.
Oh, we got to do the mask
giveaway. Oh, shit. We got a giveaway, man. I'll let you take it.
So Cult Epics has released one of my favorite modern giallos. This movie is made in like 2011, though. Came out finally on Nico's new label, Real Gore. This is the second release after they did the remake of Violent Shit. This is their second release, which I personally recommend. You get a soundtrack in that set. You get the movie, of course, and a nice little slip, like slip box, and not really a slip cover. It's like a box, you know, stacked to as much special features as Nico can do, as usual. And so, basically, Nico has a giveaway. You need to purchase this film. Number one, to be entered into the giveaway, you need to proof of purchase after 10/2/16. Is that today?
Yep.
All right. So after 10/2, if you show your proof of purchase, that will enter you in to win an official license. I don't know if they're licensed. I'm just making this sound better. Nico, if they're not licensed, I'm sorry. But anyways, an official Masks t-shirt.
Nice.
So there's a few to give away. Well, I'll tell you what. If you enter, you'll probably get the shirt because I don't imagine we'll have a ton of people purchasing masks. But it comes highly recommended for me. If you listen to this show religiously, which I don't know how you do it, I've talked about Masks for quite some time actually on the show. I even had an in-depth talk about it with on our Mono Macabro shows yeah. with Pete Toombs. I have always been a fan of Masks since 2011 and have been hounding a few companies to release it. So this is a personal recommendation from me, one of my favorite modern giallos, one of my favorite movies of that year. Truly a great giallo film with a killer soundtrack. So enjoy it. Purchase it. It's well worth it. And also support Nico's new label and, of course, anything else on Cult Epics. Because he releases shit that kind of like artsploitation that they don't really touch. You know, so giving films a chance. So I will be I'll be happy to see if you purchase that and we'll get you a t-shirt.
Very cool.
So other than that, I think that's it. Other than plug, 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 plug. of everything else. So
yep. Also if you buy anything from Vinegar Syndrome or any of our sponsors, Horror Pack or Grindhouse Video, or even Coffee Shop of Horrors, I have some sample coffee to give away and I have I think one more mug left to give away. So we'll do a couple drawings at the time. So you got a couple weeks. But during that time if you buy anything from our sponsors and if you email us the proof of purchase that you've done that, we'll enter you into the drawing. So you can email, for both these drawings, email readme@thescreamcast.com. That will enter you into these drawings. So there you go. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. I want to thank all you guys for being patient. We had a couple-week hiatus there. But
hey, I was at Fantastic Fest. I mean, what yeah. do you guys want? So, yeah, and if I hear one more person say, oh, man, I got to go, fucking go. You have a year to save up. It's a fairly cheap festival. Your badge costs about $400, but you got to break it down to like 30 some movies and a fucking party and a bunch of free drinks.
Yeah.
It's well fucking worth it. So, in airfare, doesn't cost a lot. The hotel is probably the only thing that you pay a lot for. But a great fest.
Cool.
One of the best times of my life. So, great every single time.
Very nice. All right. We'll talk to all you guys next time. Of course, drop us a line on social medias. It's all there at thescreamcast.com. There's all the social media links. Drop us a line, and we'd love to hear from all of you. All right, have a great week. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.